All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubois. And if you've ever been curious about transforming a side hustle into a $9 million real estate portfolio, today my guests, Lauren and Robert Bells from Bells Living, join us to reveal their journey from single family homes to a 27 door portfolio in just under 5 years. Lauren, Robert, welcome to the show. I'm excited to hear about the story.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yeah, no problem. So the biggest question is always, you know, you walk into a room where people are like, oh, I see you flipped a house or bought a house. How did you get started? What was the first idea into it? Because it doesn't just happen, but then all of a sudden it happens all at once. So what was the first step into real estate for you guys?
That's actually so true. We were military, and so we had just relocated ourselves to Salt Lake City, Utah. We weren't going home for the holidays because we were actually getting married right after Thanksgiving. So we decided our first holiday season away from family, totally. We were going to stay in Utah. We had a friend actually whose family was in Utah, also military. And he just happened to say, hey, you know, I know you guys are staying here. If you want, you can come over to our family Thanksgiving and we'd love to like spend the holidays with you. So we actually took him up on it. And he had just told us that he bought a fourplex in Alaska and it was going great. And so he was like, you know what? Just read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's not that hard. This isn't that hard. You guys should get into real estate investing. So we ended up buying it for our honeymoon. And then over our honeymoon, we read the book. And then after that, I guess the rest is history, right? We started with one single family home. Our goal has definitely shifted, right? When we started, I think we originally just wanted to have like an extra little side bag of money for tuition for our kids when they eventually got to college, because we just see that, you know, the tuition keeps raising and it keeps increasing year over year. Yeah. So that was what we originally had set in mind as far as like our goals. And then it kind of just snowballed. Like you said, it was like nothing and then all at once. Right. So that's kind of how we got started. It wasn't ever meant to be what it is now, 'cause it has always been like our side hustle, if you will. But we've kind of just kind of kept the momentum rolling.
But that, like, Rich Dad Poor Dad was the real catalyst. It kind of changes your psyche of, oh, this traditional path really isn't the way forward. If you start investing in real estate, and from that came learning about the Burr method, house hacking, all of the above, it just started us. And once we got started, then we went from the single family to multifamily to bigger to raising money. So all of the above.
Open Pandora's box. It's an interesting take on a honeymoon, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we were just at the pool and had time to kill.
There's something to be said about having just a week to relax, because that was probably the most important part. We had time to read a book, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, so you know, the journey does kind of open itself up with the Pandora's box analogy, in that there's so much that comes out of it. You open it up and it's like, oh, you can do this, and oh, you can do that, and sometimes people get trapped in the shiny object syndrome where they're chasing this and chasing that. How do you guys stay focused and stay on course when it comes to, you know, building your portfolio?
You know, I think what kept us initially on track was just like being risk averse and, okay, single family home, that's something tangible. I have a house that I can remodel and I know I can rent it.
And I think too, it was like, it's just one door, right? So we just need one person to rent it. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that was like our mindset.
That was like, it's a psychological, like, all right, I have one person, I can manage this. Mm-hmm. And then we realized benefits of single family, right? You can control it. It's an investment. It's not really a business. But we saw the big disadvantages of it, in that 1 or 2 months of vacancy devastates your cash flow for the whole year.
Yeah.
Or you have a water heater and a AC unit go out at the same time. And again, there's no cash flow for the rest of the year. So seeing that, and then doing more investigation, just like, oh, how does multifamily work? How does 2, 3, 4 units work? Got us interested into trying to scale into something bigger.
And I would say that Robert's dad was kind of the little birdie in our ear, because he had done multifamily prior, before, you know, when he was younger. And so he was trying to tell us, you know, this is great, because if you have 4 units, don't think of it as you having to find 4 people to rent it. Think you only need 3 of them to be full to then pay whatever your bills are. And then the 4th one, well, that's all the stuff that you take home regardless, you know, or you have just more cushion. And so his dad actually pushed it for probably 2 years, I would say, before we actually did it. Robert was much more of a proponent of like, let's do multifamily. And I was still so gun shy. I was like, no, single family. Like, I feel like I know the market. I feel like I know that what people to target really. And then we found a triplex again over like a Christmas break. We kind of had gone to see family and things were just kind of slow and calm. So we started to look on the MLS and we saw a triplex that had been sitting for a while in Salt Lake City. And so that was our first multifamily deal that we did.
Yeah. So tell people that are listening along, you know, what did you find to be the primary difference between single family and your multifamily properties as you transitioned?
I know for me, it was organization, meaning keeping a process in how you do things. Cause you can keep a single family house in your head. You can say, the lease ends in October, or like, yeah, I remember the water heater was replaced in May. Like that can be remembered, especially if it's just two of us working on this. But as we've gone to like a triplex and the single family, so we're four units, like my memory just doesn't work like that.
Yeah. So. And another point to that is like, this was always like the side hustle. So remember during the day we're doing like our W-2, yeah. We had just had a baby, during the renovation of this triplex. So I think the biggest mindset shift that we had to come up with together was just having like more systems and processes and being more organized. There was less pressure as far as having with the vacancies. We, in all of our, kind of assets or buildings that we buy, we try to make it to where we can survive some vacancies. You know, if we have a few units that are vacant for so many months, like we'll still be okay. It's not, you know, no one's going to be calling us saying we're in default. So that was another like kind of relief that we had. But as far as like our buildings, I think we try to always look for something that has character because there's a lot of cookie cutter, apartments, right? And since we are on the smaller side, there's no way we can compete with all the amenities in Class A buildings. So we try to look for buildings that still have some kind of character. Maybe they're, you know, early 1900s or mid 1950s, like 1950s, but there's something that makes them stand out. So when we are promoting our spaces, we can at least sell the charm with the building.
It's not just like a 1970s cinder block box, you know. So
exactly.
You know, to get to 27 units, you definitely have to start raising capital at some point. There's a scaling moment where you're like, I'm addicted to buying houses now and I need to start using other people's money to really scale this thing out because I've used all of mine. So what are you guys doing to fund your deals these days?
So now we are strictly raising capital. We've seen too, like when we try to acquire more doors at one time. So the triplexes and stuff, we would buy the building and then we would bring on someone to help us renovate it. So we're always looking for that like value add play. But once we got into the bigger plays, if you will, so a 12 unit that we bought, we were about only 30% owners. So we raised the rest of the capital. All of that I would say was from family and friends. So, we had been telling kind of people what we've been doing. I think his dad believed in us the most in the beginning. He was actually the person to jump in on a fourplex with us. So we found this fourplex. We were telling him all about it. We weren't even trying to pitch the deal to him. We were just saying like, oh, wow, look, we found this fourplex and it's right next to this park and it's so great in the city. And oh, wow, there are two ones. So, we've seen that it's easier to, you know, you have more flexibility with your rents on two ones, depending on like how nice you make them. And so we were just really telling him what we had found. And he was like, okay, kind of listening. And then, I said, well, but I don't know how we're going to afford all of this. You know, I was like, I see we can like cash out refinance. This was when BRRRR was still a thing. So we cash out refinanced our single family home and we had a little bit of money. And so with that money, we could purchase this fourplex, but it needed a serious lift. Like, I don't think any like plumbing fixture actually like turned off. Like it was always dripping or leaking.
I'm pretty sure like each apartment had what, three or four plumbing fixtures and every single one leaked.
Yeah.
All four apartments.
And this place hadn't been touched.
Disaster. But
and so we were talking to his dad about it and we're like, okay, we can buy this place, but we don't know how to rehab it. We don't know how to renovate it. And he was like, okay, well, how much do you think it's going to be? And so we were like, we just looked over it really quick. And so since we had already rehabbed a single family home and a triplex, we had a kind of an idea of what it would be. And so he was like, okay, we think we could do it for like 15, maybe 20,000 a unit. And he was like, okay, well, how about this? if you guys come in and we're all 30% owners or 33% owners, like I'll bring in the rehab funds. And we're like, oh, okay, we could do that. And he's like, yeah, all you have to do is set up an LLC. So he really walked us through that process, if you will, just being the guy he is. And from there, we kind of just kept telling more of our friends and family what we were doing. And so we kind of just pick up the phone when we go to town, into town to visit like our families. We try to see some of our other family friends who maybe they're not in real estate, they're not active in it, but they've been interested in it and they've asked us questions about it. So we always try to just get FaceTime with them. I think emails, we do emails. We started a newsletter. So we have this newsletter that we tell people what we're doing each month. Cause it's very easy to like, out of sight, out of mind, I feel like. So we try to always stay top of mind with our investors. So let me see, we have emails.
It's funny, calls. The constant communication can't be like understated enough to where, even if it's unfortunate news, we'll call it, instead of bad news, but even if it's news that's great, it's just, people just want to know. It's that simple. Like, the pool heater went out, or like the AC went out again, just keeping people like, hey, this is why cash flow or, your dividend for this quarter is either non-existent or is a lot lower than what was expected. Just keeping people in the loop. That in itself is the biggest builder of trust. And trust, kind of go full circle with this, is how you get investors, is how do you get people to trust you? And with family and friends, it's relatively easy. I don't want to say it's relatively easy, but they know you, right? So there's at least a foundation of trust or background or context. So that is our takeaway is that if we just continue to communicate to people, one, what we're doing, and tell them all the news, not just the good, then that's at least one of the many ingredients to try and be successful.
And I think another thing we always try to do with our residents, because we are owner operators as well. What we try to do, residents and investors, we are always available. You know, it's to our own fault, but you could pretty much reach out to us at any time and you will get one of us to respond. I know eventually when we scale bigger, that will be harder for us, but that is something that's really important to us, to keep that open communication. So we will, that's like one of our core values, I guess, is that transparency and just, I don't know if you could call it availability, but just, you know, having the whole truth.
Yeah. I know there's one of the investor friends of mine. He was invested in this deal. They were going to build an airport hangar. So they bought all the steel, and it was hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then the actual airport, you know, got sideways on their loans. And so every year he sends them a picture of the steel in the yard to say, hey, your money's still there. Cause this loan is still out. It's been 10 years and they are still waiting. Everyone's still waiting. Everyone in the deal is still waiting for something to happen in regards to the capital that was put out. But like you're saying, good news and bad news. Hey, good news, the steel is still in the field. Bad news is we still haven't built the hangar, but we're not done yet. And you're right. You know, trust is a composition of, can I trust you to tell me the good and the bad all the time? And that's really what investors appreciate. When you disappear, that's when people get upset and they start hunting you down. They say, oh, where's my money, man? Where's my money? What are you guys doing to expand your network beyond your family and friends these days?
We really try to start going to like conferences, events, any networking, like meetups. We're also now trying to push our social media presence. So before, I mean, it's all just like a balance, right? But we would always prioritize, I feel like, for us, what we could kind of juggle. Our W-2s would come first, then we would really just hit real estate pretty hard. And then we would get on Instagram when we could, or Facebook, or, you know, share what we were doing outside of our immediate friend group when we could. But it's really hard when you're not consistent to kind of build that audience, because that audience wants to be fed, right? They want to know more about you. They want to know what's going on, just like investors, right? They don't want you to like ghost them. So we've really tried to be intentional on that side of things. Just not only just saying that we've filmed content, but trying to like put out value as well, right? To kind of keep people wanting to come back. and maybe help them solve their problems. So that's kind of what we're trying right now, just to be, to get more FaceTime. Mm-hmm. And virtually and in person. It used to just be all in person. We hadn't figured out how to leverage that virtual piece of it. Mm-hmm. But now just doing more research, you know, when you are on camera, you can literally be consumed at any point by anyone who has a computer.
Yeah, the staying power of the post is really great because it creates this like long tail of content people can really dive in and instead of you having to do the minutes worked with them and build that trust. And, you know, by the time you sit down now to actually raise capital, they might know your kids' names and all this stuff. You know, like, I didn't tell you anything. Well, I saw this, that, and the other. So, yeah, it can definitely, it's a great example of leverage, right? Leveraging time, not repeating yourself a bunch and just having that video repeat it for you. So when you guys are looking for deals, you know, to swing back to the deals part of the thing, are you guys a deal first and then get the money, or do you prefer to have the money lined up and then go looking for deals?
That's a great question, like a chicken or the egg. Mm-hmm. The best way to answer that is to, you always need to keep like the coals stoked, right? So continuously let your circle or your friend group just know what you're doing. Because nothing is worse than calling a buddy out of the blue and say, "Hey man, you got $50,000. I got a deal for you." Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. I haven't talked to you in a year. Like that's just, it's poor form. Right. So the effort is to balance one, just staying in touch because it's the right thing to do, and two, finding the deal. And I think typically we try to do our best to stay in touch with folks and let them know what we're doing. That's where the newsletter comes in, just kind of biweekly updates on occasion if something has happened with that investment. But once we find a deal, then it's a full court press to raise capital.
Yeah, so in the mm-hmm. past, we've always had our deal, and then we really push that deal. So we'll put together like a pitch deck, and we found that sometimes even the pitch deck helps the person that we're acquiring the building from, so like the seller, it makes you as a buyer look stronger, because it mm-hmm. used to be right where interest rates were low. You had all of these people competing, even in the multifamily space. I think more people probably heard about it on mainstream like media as far as the single family home residential pieces of property. Mm-hmm. But even in multifamily, there were offers left and right, over asking, waiving anything that was contingent. So like no appraisals, no inspections. It got crazy for a little bit. So we had to find a way to make ourselves stand out from other buyers, because obviously, if you want to pay more, that's great. But maybe you have to mm-hmm. then offer a smaller return. And yeah. So what we tried to do is we would, one, try to stand out as a buyer. And so we created that pitch deck. And then we would share that almost a very similar pitch deck with just different investors. And I think how we would do it is we obviously have this network, kind of like Robert was saying, that we always keep in touch with. So we would just send out the pitch deck over email to different people. And then if they were interested, just say, "Hey, reach out to us." And, you know, even if you didn't hear anything back, I don't think it necessarily means that people aren't interested in the deal. I think that sometimes they're just busy with their own lives. And so we would always just do a follow-up too, just saying like, "Hey," like a follow-up call. "Hey, we sent out this email. We have this new deal. Would you like to talk about it? Or do you have a few minutes to talk about it?" It was actually funny. This one time we were in back home, and we were just there for the holidays, and we were seeing one of our investors just to catch up. And Robert walked into the meeting, and the guy was like, "Okay, where's the pitch deck? You know, what are you pitching me?" And Robert was like, "I don't have anything today.
I just came to say hi."
Yeah.
But he expected a deal. Which is great. That's a good problem to have.
Where's the deal, man? I thought you were gonna bring me a deal.
Yeah. So
times have changed, you know, fast forward 2 years and now we're in a different climate, just with we're finding deals is the harder part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just we're still having to bridge the gap, I think, with seller expectations and like what's actually out there. Mm-hmm. As far as like what we can find debt wise and what banks are willing to lend. So it's been slower, but there are still some stuff. There's still deals out there.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, with the fact that you guys are running your lives and the kids and the household and the real estate, how do you balance it? What mechanisms or advice do you have for people who want to balance, all those things, you know, managing the properties as well, finding them, raising the money? I guess you probably, the kids probably have obligations too. Like, how do you balance it all or what sort of tips can you give to people that are looking to add real estate but are worried they already don't have time?
We've actually read a lot of books to try to figure this out. And I guess we should probably say that it wasn't all at once, right? So we've had 5 years to figure out how to organize this and to manage our lives. And we started our first deal. We didn't have any children. So, you know, that I would say that's when we learned that when we got to like really cut our teeth is it was just us. And then this side hustle, but we've learned that time blocking has helped. So, and I know not all what, depending on what your job is, you can't always time block. Like Robert, he's a pilot. It's pretty hard for him to time block. You know, when he's at work, he's at work. With my job and it being on the computer and kind of engineering tasks, I could say, okay, I know that I have these things to do. So I would do those things, say for like the first 4 hours when I was awake. And then I would stop that and move on to something else. And maybe that was real estate. And then I'd say, okay, for these next few hours, I can, you know, follow up with all of my calls, see if anyone is needing anything as far as like our residents. Did anyone need, reach out like as far as our investors? Where are we on the newsletter? So I could kind of time block that way. Our kids are now old enough to go to school. So that helps keep them kind of busy during the day. And then we have just a routine, right, that we've just kind of have to figure out what works best. And sometimes, unfortunately, we kind of divide and conquer. So if we have something that's on deadline or we're raising money, then Robert will work some weekends and I'll say, okay, you do this, I'll take the kids. And then I take the kids and he can really focus that whole weekend on real estate. But it's definitely a sacrifice. And it's a sacrifice in the short term, right? To kind of get to where you want to be. So eventually, you know, what we're working towards is having like the freedom, the time freedom to kind of do what we want, and schedule life.
Bryce, to your point, I think it's, even if it's a kind of a hit to your bottom line, to outsource the help.
Yeah.
And that has been kind of my biggest revelation for balancing time is, sure, I can mow the lawn at one of our properties, but like, is that worth half my Saturday or my entire Saturday if I go across all the other properties? And candidly, no. One, because my equipment isn't as good. It's going to take me twice as long. And I'm probably going to do a job that's twice as bad. Or I can hire a team that does this professionally. And that now saves me an entire day of my life for either one, spending with the kids, or two, working on the business. And that was from, you name it, from small tasks like replacing a faucet to larger tasks like bookkeeping. We would spend hours doing bookkeeping. And finally, good on you. She was like, I've had enough. And, and went to found a bookkeeper recommended by her CPA.
Yeah.
And
but it wasn't without its lessons, right? We tried all this stuff first. We were the guys, we were the people doing all this stuff. We were the ones doing the lawn, mowing, and it was
shoveling snow.
It was like, just a time suck. Who not how, right? So there's a book that basically walks you through it. But I think the biggest catalyst for us was we being in the military, we were forced to move. So we couldn't, all of our properties, they're all located in Salt Lake. We're in Las Vegas now. So we physically can't be there. When someone calls us, we can't. So we were almost forced to build that team early on. And then we saw the leverage of how we could leverage their time now. Although you are paying for someone else's time, I think people always think of like, instead of thinking of how you can make more money, people always think of how can I save money? And we almost have to like flip that on its head, right? You need to leverage other people to then help you kind of get further down the line. And so that's what we've learned, just by practice. But it hasn't been without its lessons, right? If it were up to us, we probably still wouldn't have had a bookkeeper, but our CPA, after us trying to do books for a whole year, turning it over to our CPA,
this shoebox of receipts isn't going to cut it, guys.
Like, exactly. He called us and he was like, you know, I don't even know how to work with what you gave me. And he was like, I would highly recommend you hire someone. And this is like in the 11th hour. This is in like March, you know, taxes are due in a month. And so I was like, well, at this point, I'm like, I will pay whatever I have to pay. Like, I have to get my taxes done. Who do you recommend? And so then he recommended that someone for us. But yeah, we've been very stubborn on that.
Yeah, it's like time is finite, money is infinite. And so
Exactly.
typically as entrepreneurship grows, you're not so worried about how much money you can make, but how much time you can buy back. And so definitely it seems like you guys are getting to that scaling point where you're tipping into money, not time, or time rather than money. So if people want to connect with you guys, they want to learn more, they want to see about investing in your next project, how do they find you? What should they do? Where do they go?
For sure, Instagram at bells underscore living, or definitely check out our website,
And that's BELZ for the people that are listening at home.
bellslivingcom.
Zed Z.
It
You caught me again. So until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks, Chris. Bye.